Hello, and welcome to the Art of the Cut podcast, brought to you in partnership with Boris Effects and our sponsors, Jump Desktop and Lens Distortions. I'm Steve Hallfish. I'm a working film and TV editor. For the last 9 years, I've done more than 400 interviews with the world's best editors. I've been using Boris Effects products for almost 30 years, and I'm proud to partner with them to bring you some great filmmaking content. Today, we're talking with Nina Erb, ACE. Nina has won 2 Primetime Emmys for her work on Project Greenlight and Insecure. She also has 3 Ace Eddie nominations, 2 for Insecure and 1 for Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Her other work includes editing Justin Bieber's Believe, the TV series Little America, and the feature film Little Owl, which also just released. Before I hop into our discussion with Nina, a brief thank you to our sponsors. Jump Desktop is a high-performance and secure app that lets you virtually connect to your editing bay as if you were physically there. Keep all your assets in one place and connect to your powerful editing bays from anywhere. Jump Desktop's high-performance remote desktop protocol lets you edit from any low-powered laptop. With end-to-end encryption, native support for macOS and Windows, and multi-monitor support, you can be productive from anywhere. Jump Desktop also has collaborative screen sharing for collaboration with your team. See what thousands of editors have been using to get their work done from across the world. Visit jumpdesktop.com/cut to begin your free, no-limits 14-day trial today. And to our partner, Boris Effects. I've been using Boris Effects and Sapphire for almost 30 years, so they're not just a sponsor to me. I feel like they've been a partner in my cutting room for decades, helping me to deliver on the creative vision of my clients, directors, and producers. For all of us, our work is about bringing a creative idea to the screen, and for me, Boris Effects is one of the important tools that I use to do that. To see how they can help you on your latest project, head on over to borisfx.com and check out the Boris Effects suite, which includes Sapphire, Continuum, Mocha Pro, Silhouette, and Optics, all in a low-cost monthly or annual subscription. If you want to read this interview with great visual support, you can go to borisfx.com/AOTC. That site also has other great filmmaking content, so keep that bookmarked. We're almost ready for this week's interview, but first, let me tell you about our latest sponsor, Lens Distortions. Lens Distortions offers premium music and effects that are perfect for film and TV, like the track you're hearing right now, as well as our theme music at the top of the episode. Their web platform offers really helpful options for editors, such as variations of every track and sound effects pairings that complement the music. I've been using Lens Distortions assets, including VFX and sound effects, for years and can say that the quality is top-notch. Plus, they have a special offer just for Art of the Cut listeners. Visit lensdistortions.com/AOTC to claim your discount. That's Lens Distortions, plural with an S, .com/AOTC. And now, Nina Erb, ACE, discusses Joyride. Let me talk to you a little bit about your director. This is a first-time director for you and a first-time director, period, right or no?
I've worked with a lot of first-time directors. They had quite a few come through Insecure, but yeah, this is definitely her first feature. Well, I don't even think she did a feature in college. I think she might have done some short films. So yeah, this was the first time for her.
I work with a lot of first-time directors as well. Let's talk a little bit about the process of working with a first-time director opposed to somebody else. How much hand-holding you do, or does it change the way that you make suggestions, for example?
It definitely does, because they're not used to conversations in the cutting room. And so I have to be a little gentler. Something's not going to work. I'm not going to say, no, I don't want to do it. It's more like, okay, let's try it. But I'm a little concerned that this is coming across this way or that way. So it's just being a little gentler, but you know, Adele's great. Like, she fully admits that this is her first run at it. And she tells me, like, I'm going to ask you for things. And if they're just ridiculous and not possible, let me know. She was very chill about the whole thing. There's a trust that was built pretty early on. And so, you know, she would often come in here, we'd screen some stuff, do some notes, and then she would kind of leave me to do my work. And usually you don't get that a lot from first-time directors. They usually want to camp out and make sure they understand what you're doing. And so there's a lot of trust from her.
I totally get it. That's awesome. What was the collaboration like once you had her in the room and you were trying to work through story issues, or even after the director's cut? What was the collaboration method between the two of you?
I mean, we just experimented a lot. And my editor's cut was 2.5 hours long. And so we were trying our best to cut things down. And then even then, there's still so many other jokes that were funny. So it was a lot of playing around to make sure, you know, she had what she wanted for her director's cut. And I think afterwards, when we presented it, it was still like 2 hours and like 20 minutes.
10 minutes is a good amount of time, you know, that's you're getting there.
Yeah. So when the producers came in, it was definitely with the eye to slash get some time out of that and make sure it's the funniest as it can be. And it was, just, you know, we discuss the scenes and they would say, all right, I don't think that joke is funny. Let's see what else we have. I would play all the different improv jokes for them. Everything that they did on set. Yeah. They would just shop for a take that they liked that made them all laugh. And if it didn't work, it was gone. And that's how we got it down to like around an hour 45 for a long time. And it wasn't until close to the second review that we got it down to like 95 minutes. It was a lot of exploration trying to amp up the funny.
Yeah, you've done a lot of comedy. I have not. What is that process like of getting through all the alt takes, getting through the improv and the ad libs? I would think that that's very tricky because you could cut forever.
Oh, yeah. There could be like 20 versions of this movie easily, if not more. Fortunately, made this thing called Script Sync. It's made it so much easier to find, you know, that line that was only said once. In this 40-minute take. They weren't 40 minutes. They were like, I think the longest one we had was like 25.
25-minute take.
They would say, okay, now do this joke. Do that joke. I mean, they're masters at comedy. And so they had it nailed down to like, they knew when they wanted the alt jokes to come in. And so it was always in their coverage. So those tend to be the longer takes where they'll say the scripted line. And once they're happy with it, okay, let's do some jokes. And they would just riff and it would be all kinds of amazing and like hilarious and sometimes not appropriate jokes, but they were really funny.
there were jokes that made it and there were jokes that couldn't have made that movie.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
You mentioned Script Sync and I've used Script Sync before, but so many people I've talked to have expressed the difficulty of doing it with ad-libs. How do you manage Script Sync with ad-libs?
Unfortunately, I have a very, very patient assistant editor. I watch everything anyways. As soon as, you know, she's done with the group, she's like, okay, the spin's ready for you. I'll start watching. But then she will watch it down and mark down where the ad-libs are. And if it's quick for her to transcribe it, she'll do it right in the script and then link it together. But sometimes the ad-libs are so complicated. And I've told her, if we're in a hurry, just put ad-lib and like give me a couple keywords so I can remember what that's about. And then later on, when we have time, you can go back and fill it out. So that's kind of like our process because we didn't have a lot of time to get the editors cut together. It was like 4 days, which I was shocked. It's like, that's what I get for an hour episode. Like this thing is 2.5 hours long. Like I have 4 days. Okay, great.
That's crazy. That is a short schedule. What do you do yourself to notate or remember great takes? Because not only do you have to remember for yourself, when the director comes in, you got to remember for them.
Yeah. Well, what I do is I usually watch and I would put my favorite one down on the timeline. And oftentimes, if it's like really hysterical, I will make a little note locator and rank it. This was a 5, made me laugh really loud. This is like a 3. And sometimes I'll say decent, which means it didn't even make a number. So yeah, there was a ranking system and stuff that I loved all went onto this chem reel, if you will. And that's what I used to cut off of. It's really helpful actually, because 4 months later, when you're doing notes and they want to know like, well, did we laugh at this like 4 months ago? It's like, yeah, we all named it a 5, or, you know, or I named it a 5. I think you guys thought it was my 6 or 4, you know, whatever it is. So it's good to have those things. I realized I had to do that once I got into features because the schedules were so much longer. And you don't have other episodes to jump to and then come back with a fresh eye. You're just in it one thing for a really long time. And it's easy for something to feel stale very quickly. So
did you have any tips about or ideas to be able to keep objective about a scene you've seen 1,000 times? Was there anything that you did to maintain that?
I don't really have tips to keep an objective mind. I think I can disconnect my emotions very easily. So yeah, so oftentimes I'm always working on something and I'll step back and look at it. Okay, if I don't know anything about this, is it still funny? Is it still making me sad? Like, what about this is making me sad? What can I do to make it more sad? The mom video. We tried a couple different versions. And of course, Ashley Park is phenomenal. And you want to be on the start of the film and see her reaction to receiving this mom video. But then we kind of realized that that's not as emotional as we thought it would be. I kind of said, you know, let me try something. I want to be on the mom more because I want the audience to feel like this could be their mom giving them this message. And so anyone who's lost a parent could identify with that. Anyone who has been adopted probably has thought about finding their parents, their mom or dad. And so if they could potentially feel a connection there. And I think it's easier when it's on the mom at the right time. When it starts to get too earnest, you go to Ashley for a little reaction or a chuckle. So that ended up working really well. There's a little, just like a facial expression that she made at the end of the video that just expressed so much sorrow. Like at first, I'll be honest, I was like, I can't show that. That's too much. And then at the end, I was like, I gotta show that. And that's what ended up getting everybody.
Yeah, I cried. You had me.
Oh, yay.
But that is interesting that you point out that a take can be too much, right? You can see that. And then later on, you decide, no, that it's not too much. Maybe it's too much during dailies when you're watching, but when you're caught up in the emotion of the entire movie, then it feels right.
Yeah. During dailies, there's just so much. The film was so long. By then, I was like, pacing wise, I shouldn't be on the shot any longer. So I didn't go there. But, you know, after we've kind of chiseled away and found the film and found the arc for Audrey, I feel like we did a better job with making sure people were with her, because performances for every actor always changes. Sometimes it starts one way in the editor's cut, changes to another way in director's cut, and then producer's cut. And sometimes it goes right back to the editor's cut. And so there is exploration for all the characters. And at one point, I think Lolo was the funniest. So Lola got a lot of airtime. We gotta like balance that out, do a little more Ashley or Audrey. And Deadeye was probably, I would say transformation or the evolution of Deadeye really went full circle. When I got the script, I remember reading it and loving it and realizing like Deadeye's gonna be an interesting character. This is probably the first Asian non-binary character in a movie. So I need to be really careful with this. It's easy to make them the butt of the joke or like so out there that you're just like, oh, that person's really weird, you know? But I didn't wanna do that. I really wanted to make sure that Deadeye came across relatable. So in my editor's cut, I believe they came across that way. But then through the process of exploration, because you always want to make sure you're using the funniest stuff. And there were other performances where that I was a little more aggressive, yelling out the jokes instead of performing it. And it was just different levels. And some of them were really funny. But collectively, once you put it all together, Deadeye's character became less likable just because they were very aggressive. They were screaming a lot, which appeared angry. And so while that might have been funny on set, once it's in the film and it's cut up, it just didn't translate. And so previews, we kind of got that comment that people weren't really latching on to Deadeye much. So we decided to go back to the editor's cut and make minor adjustments from that. Yeah, I think lately, because I chose to make them socially awkward and just wanting to belong and wanting to be friends with this group of women, that made it a little easier for people to take because, you know, who hasn't been in an awkward situation, you know? Yeah, I mean, I still remember being the last one picked for dodgeball. So it's like, yeah, we all have those things that we draw from. So once I did that with Deadeye scored much higher.
The scene where I think that I made my best connection with that character was the poker playing scene where she was making up a card game. And she just revealed herself in really lovely ways. And I'm like, oh, you know, she's weird, but likable. Relatable.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what we wanted. Yeah. Everybody's weird, right?
Yeah, there you go. You've made this transition from unscripted, which so many people have asked me like, oh, I'm in unscripted and how do I get to scripted? Not that that needs to be the progression that you have to go from unscripted to scripted, but so many people want to make that jump. How was that possible for you?
It was possible because I just didn't take no for an answer. I, you know, had done a lot of different projects in unscripted. I've been very lucky to work on some.
You have worked on the biggest of the big. I can't believe unscripted let you go. You've done so many of the top unscripted projects.
Yeah, but you know, once you do it, you're like, okay, how many more seasons can I do of Top Chef? So yeah, I wanted something different and I just kept at it. asking for people's recommendations, if they hear of anything. And then I kind of noticed that there was a period of time there where like they had these scripted shows that were parodies of the reality shows, right? There was Unreal, that was a parody of The Bachelors, that whole franchise. And then there was Real Husbands of Hollywood.
Which you did.
Yeah, yeah. And that was a total parody of the Real Housewives franchise, which I also did. So I was like, all right, I have an in here. I got an in here. And then I researched all the producers. I was like, oh, I know this person who knows that person. So I called my friend who I met while working on Curb. I like was called in to do some assistant stuff. And she remembered me and she was like, oh, yeah, yeah. Just tell this guy I know you and he'll at least bring you in for a meeting. And it's like, that's all I wanted. Just get me in there for a meeting. And if I can't get the job, then that's on me. So yeah, I went in there and strangely enough, they didn't care that I worked on that Orange County Housewives series. They were more interested because I worked on a concert movie with Justin Bieber. So they were like, okay, because I guess that season they had a lot of performances. So they wanted someone who knew how to deal with that. A lot of cameras, a lot of performing, music, dance, all that stuff. So it was pretty funny because I expected questions about the Real Housewives show and not a single one.
I have heard some funny things about what gets people jobs in interviews. I remember one, somebody said they thought they had edited the perfect program or movie that would get them this gig. And it wasn't there. Like, you know what we liked about you? You edited that one movie with the horse riding, and we knew we were going to have horse riding in this one. I'm like, horse riding editing, of course, that's a real specialty.
Yeah, right? It's so interesting what people gravitate towards in your resume. And you think it could be one thing because it makes sense intellectually, but it could be anything. I mean, horses.
Yeah, horses.
Concert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm also interested in the idea that using the things that you've done as strengths instead of what you might think, oh, I've got to get around the fact that I did unscripted. No, you probably used that to explain how you could take a mass of stuff that does not tell a story and make it tell a story.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think in the beginning, I didn't make much progress in this transition because I was trying to come up with ways to hide what I learned. But then I realized, you know what? I learned a lot. This is a great boot camp. So I need to figure out how to reframe it. And that's exactly what I did. If it was a comedy, I would always ask them, hey, do you plan on doing improv? If they say yes, great, because doing reality, exactly like what you just said there. I mean, there's a lot of material that we have to wade through and, you know, we have to make it cohesive and coherent. So I'm used to dealing with a lot of material and I have a way of organizing it and I have a way to retrieve it once we're in the notes process. And also, I'm also used to doing my own music and my own temp VFX because you don't have a big team when you're on a reality show. You are sharing your assistant with like four other editors. So you have to be self-sufficient. And I think that really sold it, at least for the team that was on Real Husbands. They were like, yeah, this thing is fully scripted. There's not going to be a lot of improv, but we like that you know how to cut music. And we like that you are not afraid of doing temp VFX.
Perfect. Yeah, I talked to Chad Galster, who cut Yellowstone, and he said he got that job because supposedly Taylor Sheridan said, I want unscripted editor.
Really? Oh, wow.
He said, who's the best unscripted guy that you know? And he asked a buddy of his and who happened to know Chad.
That's weird.
So I think people recognize skill set of being able to construct something, find a story, deal with a lot of footage, all those things that are very complicated. I think there's probably a lot of people that couldn't do the reverse thing. You can be a greatest scripted editor and you go to unscripted and you'd be lost.
Like, what is all this stuff? None of it makes sense.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Ad-libs is one of those things that I want you to talk a little bit about that. Just the editing process. Of course, there's finding the best joke, but then because these things are not done consecutively, like you can't go, oh, I've got the one take that's great and everything will flow. You're trying to like pull funny lines from all over. How does that affect your editing and how do you get around that?
It definitely was challenging. In every single scene, there are different jokes, different ad-libs. And you would think that it'd be as simple as like, okay, here's the scene and I'm going to take this joke out and pluck the other one in. It doesn't quite work that way because people are in a different position or maybe this joke came a little later and you want to move it up. And it's just remembering like, where did I hear that and? or that but or the then, you know, like little pieces of words that could like transition into the joke or out of the joke. And then also split screens have become my best friend. You just do that so that continuity, it makes sense. Yeah, somehow it works.
Two shot split screens and an over the shoulder, a little of everything.
A little of everything. In the opening scene at the park, the Asian parents were there and we had Audrey's parents come up and they both had great improv jokes. And we were playing around with them. And then we realized, okay, well, we got to shorten it because we want to move this along. So we can't really stay here too long. But through the process of cutting and losing certain things, the Asian parents weren't turning around when they hear Audrey's parents anymore. They were just kind of like standing in a certain direction because they were in another part of the scene. So I had to figure out, okay, how do we do this? If they don't turn around when you say hi, that doesn't work, right? They need to turn around. So I think I found a take for Jenny, the mom, where she looked over her shoulder. I was like, okay, well, this could work because I just need one of them to turn around. So that's what I did. Kind of split screen that and then, you know, kind of slid the voice like, hey, and then turned around and immediately went to the other set of parents. And there's a lot of that throughout the entire film. And yeah, and definitely split screens that you wouldn't even think could be possible.
I seem to remember most of it was set on tripods. Wasn't a lot of handheld. Once you're handheld, then you're in real difficult territory for doing a split.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, sometimes you can make it work still. You can stabilize a shot. Shockingly, I actually learned on Insecure how to add a camera movement, a handheld feel that was like really normal. So I was like, all right, let's make these shots static and do my split screens and then I'll put the camera move on it. So yeah, I think the only time that they had some handheld stuff was after they were thrown off the train. And they're walking around. I think that was the only time the cameras kind of moved around a lot.
What's your process or your approach as you're in dailies? When you get new footage and you've got an empty timeline, what do you do?
I read the script of the scene a couple times. I'll read it, remind myself, okay, this is told from this character's point of view. And then I'll read it again and kind of try to figure out like, okay, what does one character want from the other one? So by the time I'm watching the dailies, it's like the lines are really baked in my head. So I don't have to listen to a line, look down at the script or anything. So it really helps because somehow I'm able to remember it better and pick the right takes, or at least what I think is the right take for the first draft anyways. Yeah, so that's my process. And after that, this is going to sound totally insane, but I throw it together very quickly. So the bones are there. And then as I'm putting it together, I'm always thinking, oh, wouldn't that be interesting if we cut to that other take? And so I'll copy it and I'll do an alt. And then from that, I'll look at it and go, okay, well, what would happen if we started this way instead of how we do it? So I'll come up with different ways to get into a scene, get out of a scene. And I heard this once, I don't remember where, but it made me realize I want to try that. So I think someone was talking about cutting something from the middle out. Well, that's interesting. Okay. So I found like a line that we can build a whole thing around. It's like, okay, this is a great line. Good performance. We're going to build it from there. And it got a little messy, but I think I want to try that again because it was such an interesting exercise. Like it forced your brain to think in a whole different way. That was fascinating. I would paint myself into a corner, of course, but
that happens.
Yeah, it was a good exercise.
I want to stay with the idea of your approach to the scene. When you look at the dailies, you read the script, are you cutting from select reels? Or are you going from the Avid script sync or are you going from bins?
I have my bins open when I'm watching it, but then I close it and use a script once I'm ready to cut. But when I'm watching it, I'm always putting, you know, selects I like on the timeline. So I'll work off of that reel. It'll be like a massive reel of things I liked. And I usually try to build off of that. And then I'll go back and really use script sync to make sure, okay, if I need her to sound like she's covering for someone, like let's audition all the takes and make sure that what I have in there is the best one.
And that's kind of what you're saying about the bones of the scene. You know, you want to be on a close-up at this point. So then you just have to look at all the close-ups.
Yeah, but I also look at the other stuff because sometimes you have a great performance. I mean, it's on the wrong shot, but sometimes it fits. So you just take those words and you put it right in their mouth in the close-up. It's on a wide shot. And sometimes I'm lucky and it works great. I do listen to everything. And I love the unplanned mistakes or accidents. Those are the best.
You've got an ensemble cast and juggling of characters. Talk a little bit about that need to not always be on one character or not to lose a character in the midst of other characters.
That was a challenge because there are four of them. Usually it's much easier, a two-hander. My first edit was always leaned towards like whatever I felt was the funniest. And sometimes that may not do all of them justice. It would just make one of the characters shine. So it's good for me to look at and go, okay, well, that's not good. Let's try and balance it out a little bit. Let's go in this direction or the other direction. And Audrey's character, if she was just a straight woman, she didn't get a lot of jokes. It was her story. It was all through her lens, but she didn't have those jokes that Lolo had. And her character wasn't as complex as Deadeye. She wasn't, you know, the ultra hypersexualized actress like Stephanie's character. So it was a challenge to make sure that we didn't lose Audrey's character in every scene. And so we made sure to be on her as much as we can when it made sense. And if there was an improv where she shined, that definitely was like, okay, we got to be on that one. So yeah, it was a balancing act for sure. And it took a while.
She couldn't speak Mandarin, but she could speak Gollum, right?
Yes. Yeah, that was so funny. I'm so glad that stayed in the film.
That was a great line. Talk a little bit about intercutting. And there's a great series of intercuts at the hotel because all the characters go off their own separate ways. They break up. Normally, the four women are almost always together. In the hotel, they split up and the stories are intercut. And to me, it got faster and faster and faster as we got to the, I will just call it the climax.
Yeah, definitely. That actually, they all started as scenes. And that whole montage was very long. It was like 5 minutes. It definitely didn't work at 5 minutes. So it was, you know, making sure like, okay, well, what are we trying to tell with this story? What is the story of Kat and Todd, right? How do we quickly get out the information that we need to get to the basketball and a Theragun? For Deadeye, it was all about trying to do a dance off. And so that was our comic relief, right? And when things were getting a little too uncomfortable, I guess, you know, you throw in a little something funny. It was a lot of whittling things down and debating on like, well, what's the funniest part? Like, is it Lolo saying tongue lips when she's trying to, you know, kiss Baron? There was one dance that I think we really cut down that Deadeye had. I thought it was great, but we didn't need it. It was just this moment when she was like totally facing off with the Jin Yang and she had this like double middle finger move that she did, you know, which I think she did the morning after at the coffee table. So there's a dance that had that in there and it didn't stay. But yeah, it was just finding the best parts and trying to make it work. And once we got the form, it was like, yeah, it should be faster and faster because we don't want to linger on any one thing. Because a lot of it was very, you know, it was a dirty montage. It really was. I tried my best to make it funny and not an uncomfortable thing for people to watch.
I also want to talk a little bit about montage. There's a lovely one. I called it the Love China montage, which is like, I love China. Yeah. Talk about giving the audience a moment to breathe or to let the story open up a little bit, to have those little lovely moments.
Yeah, those are definitely important because I feel like the pacing of the film is just fast and furious and, you know, there's a lot happening and there's a lot of music and there's just a lot. So part of the reasons that drew me to the film is that it was supposed to show you what China is like, what Asia is like. You know, of course, it's been in the press already that we shot in Vancouver. So it was a challenge to make it look like they shot in China. But I think our production designer, he did a phenomenal job. I use those moments to kind of show what the countryside in China would look like, what the little rivers would look like. It was just a moment to stop and kind of look at the scenery and like remind people that this is still, it's a road trip movie. And this is the scenery that we're walking through. And we're also making sure that we know that Audrey's slowly falling in love with the country, one that she was shying away from before. Yeah, and it was important to put a lot of cultural specific jokes in there, like the little boy, you know, driving a moped with all four of them on there. Because that happens a lot, actually.
I've been to Vietnam and to China, and it definitely happens. You're like, there's an entire family, including a newborn,
yes,
in that moped.
And groceries.
And groceries, right. My interpreter, when I was in Vietnam, I was talking to him about a crazy thing that I saw, which is a guy driving with two full-size trees on either side of a moped. And he goes, oh, well, I needed my full-size refrigerator, and it got delivered by a guy on a moped. I'm like, How does that happen?
Yeah, it was very important for us to use that shot. There was never a question whether that shot was going to be in there. But the earlier on in the lorry, that was an important point because Audrey's finally enjoying this wrap, this Asian Chinese wrap that the ladies are giving her. Whereas like in the beginning, she would have never eaten that. So it was also there to show progression of her character as she's falling in love with China.
And the movie is very funny throughout, but because you do have to have these emotional moments, you have an emotional payoff. I'm sure playing with tone and trying to juggle tone was a difficulty that you were trying to deal with in editing.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. We had to be very careful with that for sure. And in the transition in and out of it. Yeah, there was times when I think we may have intercut the tone too much. And so we kind of all looked at it and thought, well, it's kind of uneven. And it felt like we were getting whiplash because it was funny. And then it was sad. It was funny. It was sad. So it was just about like picking the right moments. Like, okay, here's an emotional moment. Okay. Is it about to get a little too syrupy? Maybe. Okay. Maybe this is where we put a joke in and then living with that a little bit and seeing how that feels and going back to the comedy moments. But yeah, I think inherently there's certain scenes that are just supposed to be more emotional. And that's okay. I'm obviously the one where Audrey's getting dressed the morning after before they go to the adoption agency. That was a very sweet and, you know, emotional scene. Her revealing how difficult it was for her growing up to her best friend. After it gets a little too earnest, you want a grandma to come in and do a bad joke. And then because then we're about to get into something else that's very emotionally traumatizing when she finds out that she's Korean.
Yeah. The other thing that I noticed was giving the audience time to process certain things. There were mini montages or little moments where you're like, okay, you just discovered this huge important thing or the character just learned something terrible. You let the audience live with that for a second.
Yeah. Yeah. We definitely needed to do that. And that goes hand in hand with smoothing out the change in tone. I think we experimented with different ways to let the audience sit with it. I think at one point, maybe we didn't let them sit with it that much. Yeah, it was just a lot of playing around and seeing how it felt. And I hope we arrived at a good balance.
Yeah, I think so. But where that's really tricky, right? You can feel that balance when the movie's 2.5 hours long and you're like, oh, it's very lovely, the pacing and all this stuff. But then you get it down to what, 90 minutes and now everything's out the window that you did. How do you maintain those quiet moments in a 90-minute film?
It's really just making sure the funny parts are fast so you have a little more room for the times when people can slow down and take in information. It's so funny because like someone said, oh yeah, comedy is very fast. And I remember thinking like, is it really? And I guess I hadn't realized it, but it really is. I've tried it slower once just to see what that would feel like and it was terrible.
Comedy has also, I think, changed a little bit. Like I was watching Dirty Rotten Scoundrels and they'll sit on a two-shot forever because you got two great performers in a two-shot together. You're like, why cut to the close, right?
Mm-hmm. I tried to do that for one scene, but it didn't work. It was like trying to not make it fast. And it was like, okay, this is not funny at all. I should get out of the shot.
I want to talk about two specific things. One, I really love the rhythm of the slap scene.
Oh.
Is it kind of built to a climax? Or is it just like a quack, quack, quack? It just felt very rhythmic. Like I could almost hear music underneath of it.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that scene was not scripted to be that at all. Yeah,
really?
The first two guys had a longer slapping game before the ladies came up. And they also had a very long slapping thing where they would tie. They would both slap each other at the same time, and then they would do the hand gestures again, and then they tied twice, and then the third time was when Kat won, and she smacked the crap out of Lolo in all the takes, and in between, they would throw little jibes at each other, and it was funny, but it just was too long. Yeah, we tried a lot of different ad-libs for that, and nothing felt right, so I was like, well, what if they just beat the crap out of each other? Let's try that. And they're like, well, we didn't shoot it that way. How are you going to do it? I was like, I don't know, but I'm going to try. And yeah, I'm glad it felt rhythmic because I wasn't sure that it came across that way.
Oh, no. And I think most people, if you've seen that scene, I can't believe that it wasn't shot for the way that you cut it. It just seemed natural to me.
Oh, good.
So Very nice. And then the other one, which is such an obvious question to ask, is the K-pop music video. Just talk to me about the craziness of that. Did it go longer? Was it not crazy enough and you made it crazier? Too crazy and you made it less crazy?
The K-pop video, that shockingly, my first cut stayed until literally the last month when we're trying to lock. We're trying to lock for the final preview. It was all green screen when they're not in the airplane hangar. So we were using that with images throughout the entire film to remind people of their journey, right? That was going to be the story of this whole K-pop number that was happening inside Deadeye's head. I think the choreographer did a phenomenal job, and I hope he's happy with the cut, but we did have to slow down a lot of it. So I think the final cut actually was more beneficial towards a story versus choreography.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
And you'd had a little bit of experience with that with High School Musical.
And Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. There are lots and lots.
No, that's true. One of the things that I thought of as an editor watching that was, did you have all of that material the first time you cut that video together? Or were you and was the director and anybody else going, you know what we need? We need an animated cat licking the screen. Did you have everything?
We had nothing. It was literally just green. And for a split second, when I cut it together, I was like, do I leave it green? I don't know. Like, what would we put back there, right? And there were a lot of conversations. They were shooting, and I remember calling Adele, like, so what were you thinking for the back of this? And, you know, she was always like a little busy. She's like, we'll figure it out later. And, or she'll send me like two links to different K-pop videos. Like, I think these are kind of cool. And then one was like, I think in a pink background the entire time. And another one had these sets that were like out of this world. I'm like, well, can't do that. So it was our second assistant, Melissa Khan. She's some After Effects genius. We found a lot of different textures and things that were in Getty. And then she temped it all in and cleaned it up. And that's what we screened with the first time. We always knew that we wanted something that would remind everybody of their journey in the green screened area, but we didn't know what. So that definitely did not come until later, which is why I had to slow down a lot of the edits and so that we could be on one shot long enough to see the animation of the cats in the little inner tube spinning, or like the Theraguns and the basketball. And yeah, and the Licky Cat, that came at the very last minute. I think we were still approving versions of that up in Canada when we were trying to do DI.
That's crazy. The other thing that I thought of editorially is trying to manage the epilogue. So you come to a conclusion of the movie and then you're like, now we need to kind of wrap things up. But you can't have that go on forever. I felt it was a very good amount. For me, it was like, I'll hang out for this. But that could just go on forever and you'd feel like you have five endings or something. How did that epilogue evolve?
Well, I think it was easy because they couldn't shoot at the Louvre. I was like, all right, well, let's not give that away too much that we shot this in Vancouver. So I was like being brief with each little pod, each little visit. And yeah, I think all of those could have been much longer, and they were much longer. Looking at the statue and the commenting on the food, and it was all longer, but we definitely just cut it down. And their hellos, their reunion was much longer too. There was a moment there where I thought, well, maybe this could be the wrap up, because they all had little things to say about what they've been doing. Right. And Kat was like, oh, sorry, I'm late. You know, I was stuck at the airport or something. But then we didn't need it there. It was too abrupt if we ended it right there. I was like, all right, we'll just make this what it is. Very quick hello. And then off they're looking at sculptures and then they're bored. Let's just go to the dinner, because that's really where you get the wrap up. And of course, there's tons of ad-libs and jokes there too. That was a process of us deciding, okay, what information do we want out of here? And do we just want to give information, or do we want to make joke and information and more jokes? Or like, how do we want to do this? Again, a lot of just laying it out. So it was long, and then looking at it and going, yeah, it's not working. And then chopping away. Anything that people missed, you know, it would go back in.
You mentioned the VFX, at least temp VFX, were done by one of your assistants. Let's talk about assistants and either finding them, knowing what to do with them, knowing in an interview, hey, what's valuable for me to get from an assistant. What are those things for you where you either an interview, what strikes you to pick an assistant, or when they're working for you, you're like, this person's fantastic. I can't let them out of my sight.
Yeah, I'm working with Joya Caruso right now, and she is fantastic. I had actually met her years ago. Troy Takaki had a little get together. And so a bunch of us were at this wine bar, and I think I met her there. And, you know, she would just kind of pop up every now and then at different events, different ACE events. And I had a great assistant for many years, Lenarian Hubbard, and she's cutting now, doing amazing. So yes, yeah, so trying to find someone to replace her was really tough because she did it all. Like, she did everything. And it didn't matter what I asked her to do. She never like got upset about any of it. And I could throw anything, that's all my crazy ideas. Like, I want this, and then I wanted to flip, and then, and she would just go, okay. And she'd go do it. So I was like, how do I find someone like that? You know? And so like, that was part of the conversation. Like, okay, how are you with After Effects? Well, first I want to make sure that they're interested in After Effects, because some people just aren't, you know. Some people are like, no, my thing is sound design. Great. Like, so I always find out what they're interested in. And then I kind of talk to them, and I always ask them to walk me through one of their days, because depending on what they say, it's very telling of whether we're going to get along or not.
How is that telling? What would be the giveaways?
If they're like, oh, I stroll in around 10, I make coffee, have breakfast, and then I start working, you know, I've had someone say that. So I was like, oh, gosh, so if you're starting at 10, when would I start? You know, so I was figuring that out, and I was like, okay, well, that's probably not going to work. I'm not a slave driver. Like, you know, if you want to start later, that's fine. But then now I have to adjust my schedule, and I need to be okay with that as well, because, you know, I have a family. So, you know, I don't want to work till midnight every night. So the assistant that would say, oh yeah, I'll get in as early as you need me to, you know, if the dailies are there by 8 a.m., I will be there at 8 a.m. I'll get started right away, so you have something to cut by 9 or 10. All right, great. So this person understands that their job is there to make the editor's life easier, not the other way around. And I just need someone that has the ability to anticipate. And the best example of that is where we're at right now, Joy and I, we screen things in a different area, in a screening room versus the edit bay. So I have a very crazy mouse. Yeah, it's like a vertical thing that's like on a wedge. And there's a trackball. So very specific. It's that way because I had carpal tunnel. So I need it to be that. And I just can't even work with a normal one because my hand is so used to just being prone. She doesn't know any of that. But because we're screening at another place, and she's thinking like, we should be prepared if they want to do notes on the fly. So she grabbed my mouse, put it up there and set it up. And I didn't even have to think about it. Because if it was up to me, I would have forgotten. And then be like, oh crap, can you go get it? You know, but she just knew to do that. I didn't tell her. Yeah. So I was like, someone like that, that has the ability to anticipate, is worth their weight in gold, I think.
Mm-hmm. Do you want somebody that wants to be an editor or somebody that doesn't want to be an editor? What's your take on that?
I prefer someone that wants to be an editor, because I do like to bounce my cuts off of them and see like if this is landing or if it's not working. Is it emotional? Is it funny? Is this character more likable, less likable? I think the assistants that don't want to cut may not be interested in those conversations, but I feel like the assistants that do want to cut are eager for that kind of interaction, because I think they can learn as well. I really value their opinion because they've seen the dailies. They know what I have to work with. And sometimes they'll say, oh, remember there's that one other take where they did this. And it's like, oh yeah, you're right. So it's awesome when an assistant wants to cut, because they're cutting it in their head, I hope, I think, I don't know. But yeah, it's good to be in a situation where like your assistant is more your partner as opposed to assistant.
And where do you stand on I've had this poll. The poll is, should an assistant tell you that they want to cut? Like, oh, hey, can I cut the scene? Or is that something that you need to say, would you like to cut this scene?
I don't have any rules for that. I've had assistants tell me straight off the bat that they want to cut. Great. Awesome. Because I want you to cut too. And I always tell them like, hey, when you're doing dailies, if you're like in love with a scene, you want to cut it, go ahead and cut it. And if it's the first time I'm working with them, I will tell them like, I'm still going to cut it too, because until I know where you're at with your editing skills, I can't not cut it. I have to make sure that I have what I need to present my editor's cut. And they usually understand, you know, and if it's great and they're really proud of it, and you know, I'm like, okay, great, I'll put it in the cut. And then I will tell them, the higher ups, if they're happy with it. And if they're not happy with it, I say nothing, right? I just take the hits. Yeah. And then sometimes they'll sit in and they'll observe that. And hopefully that's something that they'll also pass down to their assistants. I don't care if they want to cut something. They can cut alongside me. It would be a nice challenge though, actually, because if they can do all their dailies, all their work, and still cut like a handful of scenes every day, they're going to be fine when they're out on their own.
Yep, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining me. It was really interesting talking about this movie and all the challenges that you had. Basically losing an hour. Holy cow, what a huge job that is in itself. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
What are you working on now?
I'm at Marvel. I can't say what show.
Okay.
But yeah, great. I'm there.
Got it. All right. Thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I definitely love your podcast and I've learned so much from that. So it's been an honor. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That's it for Art of the Cut this week. Thank you so much for listening. Again, if you'd prefer to read this interview with visual support and clips and trailers, head on over to borisfx.com/AOTC, where there's a ton of great expert content for filmmakers of all types. Also, check out my book, Art of the Cut, Conversations with Film and TV Editors, for a topic-driven curated look at the craft of editing. Thanks to Nina Erb, ACE, for joining me on Art of the Cut. And thanks to Heidi Choi for editing today's podcast. And thanks to our partner, Boris Effects, and to our sponsors, Jump Desktop and Lens Distortions. Be sure to check them out at borisfx.com, jumpdesktop.com/cut, and lensdistortions.com/AOTC. I'm Steve Hallfish. Thanks for listening. And please tell all the editors and filmmakers that you know that to get more great Art of the Cut interviews every week, please subscribe on your favorite podcast app. I'm also on Twitter at Steve Hallfish and Instagram at AOTC Podcast.